Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
Now, my expert this afternoon is consultant paediatrician Dr. Afif El-Kafash. Good afternoon. How are you? Thanks for coming into us.
Thanks for having me.
You're with us today, Dr. Afif. I know you're going to answer our listeners' questions, and we've a few of them in already. It's 087 1400 106. I know sleeping is a big topic for a lot of our listeners, but one of the things you wanted to chat about today was co-sleeping.
Yes.
Just explain what it is.
Co-sleeping is when a parent shares a sleeping surface with their child or newborn, usually in the first few months of age. And it's the biggest thing that parents are afraid to mention to us healthcare providers, because the formal advice, especially in Ireland, is to not share a sleeping space with your baby, that they should be in their own crib, whether it be it in the room or in a separate room. But when you actually look at the reality, depending on who you ask and how you ask the question, between 60 to 90% of parents will actually co-sleep with their baby over the first year of age. And at any given night, about 25% of parents will co-sleep with their baby. So tonight, there will be around 15,000 parents that are sharing a bed with their newborn infant in the island of Ireland.
Yeah, so this is the reality of what's happening, even though the kind of the mainstream or the health advice from healthcare providers is you shouldn't do this, but you know from talking to parents on the ground, the reality of that is they are doing it and they often feel they nearly can't tell their healthcare provider.
Absolutely, and I think this is where the problem lies, is if we don't actually give parents evidence-based advice on how to safely co-sleep, then they're just going to do it in an incorrect way, and that's where the risk really, really increases. The way I look at co-sleeping or sharing a sleeping space with your baby is that it acts as an effect modifier, or more probably put in a different way, it amplifies any risk factors if other risk factors are there. The reason the public health advice is to avoid co-sleeping is that it's often associated with sudden infant death and cot death. And that's the one thing obviously we want to avoid. But when you dig deep into the data, you will actually see that invariably, when you actually look at what happened during cot death that occurred while parents are co-sleeping, almost always there are additional risk factors there that are present. And co-sleeping gets the bad rap, whereas in reality, it is other risk factors that have been amplified by co-sleeping that are the real culprit. So what do I mean by that? We know, for example, that smoking, either before the delivery of the baby or following the delivery of the baby, is a huge risk factor. Consuming alcohol, taking medication that may affect drowsiness, recreational drugs, things like that, obviously you shouldn't be doing if you want to co-sleep with your baby. However, if you place your baby in a cot, they're somewhat isolated from those risk factors. Whereas if you bring your baby closer to you while having those other risk factors, that's when co-sleeping becomes an issue.
It is, because it is sort of controversial, isn't it? It's a controversial topic.
It is. The current advice in the HSE is to not to do it. However, a lot of other jurisdictions have now modified their advice on co-sleeping, and they are now providing evidence-based advice on how to do it accurately to try and minimise the risks. For example, the UK, Norway, Canada, Spain, they all now have formal co-sleeping advice.
So if people, if the number of people, you said about 15,000 parents of newborns are going to co-sleep with their children, with their babies tonight.
Yes.
Based on the data that we have. So what do you say to them if they're tuned into this now today?
So what I would say to parents is we give them the advice before they go home from the hospital that you shouldn't co-sleep with your baby. The baby should be on their back in a crib away from pillows and all of that. But what we don't do, what we fail to do, is actually give them advice on what to do if this approach fails, right? And what ends up happening is that the parents, in reality, will find that their baby will wake up every, I don't know, half an hour, 45 minutes. They will pick them up from their cot. Then they don't know what to do with them. I'm told not to bring my baby to the bed, so I'm going to sit down on a chair and rock my baby to sleep again. This is where I think the risks are amplified. Parents are exhausted. They may fall asleep while holding their baby. The baby may slip down and suffer the risk of suffocation and things like that. So it's very important then to actually inform parents on how to co-sleep safely. And there are a lot of really good resources that parents can refer to learn about safe co-sleeping. For example, the UK Lullaby Trust, Lulesh League have really, really good advice. And British Columbia Perinatal Services have really nice infographics on how to do it safely.
Okay. Just on this, listener's question, does sharing a room count as co-sleeping, or is it just if it's in a bed? I have a cot that's currently attached to the side of the bed.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting question. So when we refer to co-sleeping, we really are referring to bed sharing, sharing the sleeping surface with your baby. If your baby's in a separate sleeping surface, then that does not actually count as co-sleeping if they're in a separate cot.
Doesn't count.
No.
Yeah, and even sometimes you see the little cots that are kind of, they're attached to the bed, but they're not attached to the bed. I can't think of the name or the brand of them off the top of my head.
I know what you mean.
You know the one I'm talking about.
But they count as the baby's own sleeping service. Now, the issue with those is if there is no barrier between the baby and the parents, the concern is that the baby may slip between the gap between the baby's own mattress and the parent's mattress. So, you know, even things like that need to be done in an informed way.
Okay, 087 1400 106 is the number. If you have a WhatsApp question or a voice note, if you want to give us a call either for paediatrician Dr. Afif Al-Kafash. Another listener says there's actually so many mixed messages about baby sleeping at the moment. What's the best way, though, to put a baby down at night?
So the best way, I always say to parents, is the way that really works for them, provided they adhere to safe sleeping practices when they do put their baby down. Often there's the societal, I suppose, pressure not to get your baby used to falling asleep in your arm. And we often tell mothers that you'll spoil your baby will get used to you, your baby will never be able to sleep on their own. And all of that is BS. Babies are designed to be close to their mother. Babies need the comfort of their mother and their father, their parents in general. They need to be responsive to their baby's needs. So as long as the baby is placed in a safe area, you know, firm mattress, away from loose beddings, away from, you know, spaces where they may fall, on their back is still very, very important. These are the things to adhere to, and that's how you put your baby down.
Okay. I have a newborn and I'm terrified about SIDS. Is there anything you can do to cut the risk?
So, yes. So the biggest risk factor for SID is smoking during the pregnancy and smoking immediately after pregnancy.
Just explain what it is, first of all. Sorry, Dr. Afif.
SIDS. Sudden infant death syndrome.
That's what it stands for.
Sorry,
okay.
SID stands for sudden infant death syndrome. And the biggest, one of the biggest risk factors is smoking during pregnancy and smoking after. Even secondhand smoke can increase the risk for SIDS. Other risk factors is, you know, consumption of alcohol and then sharing a bed space with the babies. You know, being really, really exhausted or taking medication that might make you drowsy. If a parent can, you know, stick to those health advice, then the risk of SIDS significantly drops. The current risk of SIDS is extremely low. It's about 1 in 3,000.
Okay.
But every single episode obviously is devastating for the family.
Hugely. No doubt about that. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number. How do you know if a baby is warm enough? I don't want to load them up with too much clothes or blankets, but I have sometimes brought the baby into our bed because I feel I can monitor her temperature better.
Yeah, so what a general piece of advice is to leave the room temperature in and around the 17, 18, 19 degrees, 20 degrees. And if the parents are feeling comfortable and they're not cold, then the baby is comfortable as well. I would definitely not put too many vests and layers. A vest and a baby grow is often sufficient, with a safe blanket as well, if need be. And I wouldn't overheat the room for the baby because that is another risk. So bringing the baby into bed with you is all well and good, provided you, again, adhere to the safe co-sleeping practices. And again, the resources that are referred you will give you great pictures and great advice on how to do it properly.
Okay. Another listener is wondering, what is the optimum sleeping situation for a newborn? Is it the Moses basket or a crib or a pram or attachment to bed?
So not a pram. Baby shouldn't be sleeping in a pram, especially if they are elevated. And whatever works for the parents, different sleeping situations work for different circumstances and different families. By and large, babies feel much better and much more content being in the vicinity of their parents. So a cot in the parents' room close to the bed, the cot attached to the bed, I have issues with if there is no barrier between the baby's side and the parent's side. I always worry about the gap between the baby's mattress and the parent's mattress. That can be a risk as well. So being mindful of that.
What's your advice on letting a 12-month-old cry out if they continuously wake at night and can't get back to sleep without being rocked?
I have some strong views against this letting a baby cry it out. It's not something that I like advising parents to do, because we know from data that this actually increases stress hormone levels and cortisol levels in babies, and they eventually may increase their chances of becoming anxious down the line. I always think that responsive parenting is the best approach and dealing with that.
What does that mean? Like at every cry?
Responding to your baby if they start going nuts crying, you know. You can wait sometimes to see if they can self-soothe, if they're, you know, not fully crying, but starting to cry or whinging a little bit. But yeah. If you find that it's escalating and it's getting to the stage where they are crying so much, crying for help, babies that stop crying after that are babies that are beginning to learn that there's no point in me crying anymore because nobody's going to come and respond to my needs. And I think that's not the right approach.
Okay. At what age is it safe to move a baby out of our bedroom and into its own room?
They usually say for the first 6 months, you're better off being in the vicinity of the parents. Beyond that, the risk of SIDS or sudden infant death syndrome significantly drops.
Okay. Does baby sleep training actually work? We're totally exhausted, but we don't want to spend money if it doesn't work.
So it depends on what they mean by sleep training. There are a lot of really good sleep specialists that empower parents with the tools to deal with difficult sleeping situations rather than train their baby into sleeping. I don't think that you can train a baby to stop needing to be responded to in these situations. That's my own personal view. Others may disagree. But there are absolutely avenues that parents can explore with really good holistic sleep specialists that can help parents deal with difficult situations. Not necessarily do the crying it out method or sleep train the baby, but looking at the situation as a whole and trying to address what's going on.
So if this listener, if they've tried everything, seek help.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Another listener is wondering just on the co-sleeping that you mentioned, is that just dangerous for babies, or their toddler actually is constantly coming into their bed?
So, I mean, the problem with SIDS or sudden infant death is usually biggest over the first 6 months. The risk significantly drops. And once the baby can actually control their neck well, are able to sit up, are able to move around, then the risk factors for SIDS significantly drop.
Just finally, a listener is pregnant, listening to us and suffering badly with morning sickness. Have you any advice?
Gosh, I really feel for her. What I would advise her to do, is to go back to her obstetric team and discuss, some treatment options that may be available to her.
Okay. And just finally, do the mats that you put under the baby's mattress, do they work to monitor them?
I am not a believer of any monitoring devices for baby sleeping. The best monitor for the baby is their own parent.
Okay, all right. Listen, Dr. Afif Al-Kafash, who's a consultant paediatrician at the Rotunda Hospital in Dublin, thanks a million for joining us here on the programme today.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.